Welcome to Keeping Up With Life, where we empower you with health, business and family life strategies for you to live your best days. I'm your host, Pippa Hansen. I'm the CEO, a mother of teenagers and have a passion to live an active and healthy life. Each episode contains practical tips and insights on how you can succeed in all aspects of your life, delivered to you in bite-sized pieces to implement straight away. This episode is brought to you by the Sports Injury Clinic, whose mission is to enhance the lives of its clients, staff, other professionals, and the greater community. Welcome today, Jimmy Miller, exercise physiologist and nutritionist, a returning guest, and we're very happy to have you on the show.
Great to be back in the room again. Thanks, Pip.
All right, so straight to it. We're going to discuss intermittent fasting and how that works.
Yep, for sure.
So when I hear the word diet, you know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Do we like the word diet? Do we like the word dieting? How does that work?
Yeah, well, we probably don't like the word diet, and diet is a four-letter word for a reason. However, when I consult and we talk like this, people talk about diets. They talk about what they eat and why they're eating and why they believe things. So for the purpose of the podcast, and I do when I consult, even though I say that a diet, you know, is something that is normally short term or for a specific reason, and what you want is something to be ongoing and sustainable. I don't like using the word diet. It's a lifestyle change. It's something that you can do for a period of time. But I think back to when I first started studying nutrition, which was in 2004, so quite a while ago. You know, one of the first studies that they showed us was a study that said, well, which diet works. All diets have moderate success, and the diet that you can stick to is the one that will work for you. And I went back and tried to find that article, and luckily for me, they've updated it since 2004, and there was one in 2020 that said, you know, the conclusion was current evidence indicates that different diets promoted similar weight loss, and adherence to diets will predict their success. So the diet that works is the one that you can stick to.
Yeah, okay. And I suppose that does take into account different foods, doesn't it? Because there are diets that have different foods that you might like or not like.
Yeah, without a doubt, I can go through, you know, my N of one. So all the different diets that I've been on as a exercise enthusiast, as a sports player, as a nutritionist, you know, I've tried quite a bit, and most of them, when doing them really well, have been really successful for different reasons. But yeah, different diets, they work, and if you can stick to it, then that's the number one priority.
And as you've just said, sometimes you're using that diet maybe to lose weight, but also to bulk up.
Which is really good. It leads us sort of into the next thing that I wanted to talk about is, you know, what are my goals of diet? What is the goal of a diet? And the goal of a diet is to supply your body with what it needs to achieve what it needs to. I do always marvel back at you know, my parents who had, I'm one of five kids, and I was super sporty, and my big sister studied a lot, really hard, and my brother was didn't exercise so much, and my little sisters had eating concerns, and she was trying to find a diet that fit five completely different kids with completely different goals. So I tip my cap now that I've got kids who some are less picky and some are more picky.
Having to think of five different meals, or was it like, no, this is what we're having and eat it all?
Generally it was the base meal, and then I just got a whole heap more because, you know, I was doing 15 sessions a week and things like that. But, yeah, so to supply the body with the demands of what we need, so you need to have the energy levels, you need to be able to repair and recover from that exercise, you need your vitamins, minerals, nutrients for sustained life. But as a nutritionist, generally speaking, you know, a lot of the diet things that I talk about is to reduce weight or for an optimum body shape or optimal performance. So that's when I talk about, like, what do we need to eat for? We need to give the body the sustenance and the energy to complete what you ask of it.
So how can we achieve this?
Yeah, so look, when we discuss a diet, there's only really three things that you can change. And when you think back to all the common diets or the fad diets or anything you've heard of, it's all about these real three things. It's the amount of food that you intake. It's the type of food that you intake, and it's the time that you eat it. So when you think about the amount of food, you know, calories in and calories out based off the amount, you know, very low calorie diets, shakes, even some of the fasting stuff is based around reducing the amount of intake that you have. Then there's the type of food. So you change the macronutrients. That's your ketos, your Atkins, your paleo diets, your high fat, low carbs, even your low fat diets. It's changing the type of food that you're eating. And then the one that we're going to talk about the most today, the time, at what time you're eating, your breaks between eating and how that you can manipulate those for best benefit with the way your body reacts to the food that you're eating.
So with fasting, I know there are different, types of fasting, different hours of the day and different lengths of time. So do you want to talk to us about those?
Yeah, for sure. I've sort of delved into this a little bit more, and I've gone to a really good scientific paper which did all the work for me. It told us all the different types of fasting that has been done in the literature. So that's the Annual Review of Nutrition, Metabolic Effects of Fasting by Patterson and Sears. And they've sort of broken it down into four different categories. They've said complete alternate day fasting. Then the second category was modified fasting regimens. So that's on days of really low consumption and then days of normal eating. Then there's time restricted feeding, which would go into your intermittent fasting. So windows of time where you eat. And the final one was religious fasting. So Ramadan and other religious fasts, which go into large periods of time without eating for different reasons. But all of these have been studied across a wide period of time and a number of different areas to see how effective they are.
So when you're looking at those four, do they all do the same thing?
No, they are slightly different. So the different types of fasting. So complete alternate day fasting is no food at all every second day. So that's nothing. That's no. I think some even go dry fasting as well. So no food or water on alternate days. There's some interesting science around that. The modified fasting regimens is where your 5-2 diet, which is quite popular. So on 2 days per week, you have about 20 to 25% of your calculated energy needs. So realistically, that's a salad and nothing but water 2 days a week, and then the other 5 days you eat what you want. Intermittent fasting or the time-restricted feeding goes into eating all your meals of the day. Generally, it's 2 meals a day under this into a window of time. So typically speaking, that's your 16-hour fast with 8-hour of eating window or an 18-6. So that looks at, you know, stopping consumption at 7 or 8 o'clock at night and not eating again till 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock the next day, or pushing it on to 1 or 2 for the longer fasts. And also another one into there is eating 1 meal a day. So having all your daily consumption in one go and then fasting until you do that again the next day.
Okay, and I'm sure you're going to go into it, but the body doesn't start to go, oh, you're not going to feed me, so I'm not going to release.
Yeah, well, that's good. So I suppose then I was looking into the why do we fast. So there's a number of things, and this is like the science is still really trying to delve into what actually happens and the benefits you can get from it there. So I've got a number of things here that sort of relay as to why we're fasting. So when you manipulate your eating times, you will reduce your overall amount. So I suppose this is a part of the appeal of fasting, is when you say it's the three things that we can manipulate. If we're eating less, over less hours of the day, then over a period of time, you end up eating less food. Then the types of food that you eat, because if you eat high sugar foods and high things that raise your blood glucose, it's harder to fast. You change the type of foods that you're having, so you feel fuller for longer to make the fasting easier. And so it's reducing the type and the amount that you're eating. And then when your body is not fasting, you use the energy that it's normally doing to break down the food to do other things, and those other things can be really beneficial. So if I can just sort of really simply sort of put forward some of the bigger population nutrition troubles we have, you know, with growing obesity and diabetes and things like that. So when your body's breaking down carbohydrates or food, it breaks it down into glucose. So your blood sugar goes up as the glucose goes into your system. Your pancreas then secretes insulin to deal with this, and other hormones like leptin are produced, so to signal that we're full. So the body's doing a whole heap every time we eat. Then the excess glucose gets stored as fat, The pancreas gets overworked because it's continuously trying to remove this blood sugar that's in your system. The body says that there's so much of it, it starts becoming resistant to that insulin, and that's your first stage of diabetes. So that's a really, really simple explanation. But if you're continuously eating a high sugar diet, then you can see how the pathway progresses to, you know, your factory creating this insulin, and your body saying, well, there's so much of it here to do this, and it stops responding to it the way it should do. So when we look into what the science says about its effectiveness, which is where it starts getting really interesting. So I've broken these down. There's a lot of studies in animal populations, which is great, but we are animals, but we're not the type of, we're not lab rats.
We're not little mouse.
So yes, you've got to look it into the human thing as well. I would say also, I look back at one of the notes I've written here. So this is Mr. Science. This isn't me. This is Mr. Science saying intermittent fasting regimens are hypothesized to influence metabolic regulation via effects on circadian biology, gut microbiome, and modifying the lifestyle. So there's extra stuff there that is, you know, really that I'm looking forward to going into further. And one of the studies on rats that I will touch on here is something that is really interesting that I'm going to look into, and hopefully maybe do another podcast on in the future, and tie it in with our sleep podcast.
I was going to say on rats. Okay. So can you combine different diet styles for greater effect?
Yes. Yeah, you can, definitely. So, but you do have to beware, because probably one of the biggest problems that I've seen with clients who come in and they're just a little unsure, because there's so much information out there, so much information. What should I eat? Oh, this diet tells me that this food is good, whereas this one tells me this one is bad. So first, the caveat is to beware of taking a little bit from each diet to be detrimental. So I say, you know, if you're following a low carb, high fat diet, so you're eating, you know, avocado and nuts and you're reducing your carbs and you're having high fat, but then for the next meal of the day, you decide to have a high carb, low fat diet, and you have low fat stuff, then all of a sudden you're having a high fat, high carb diet.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to be good for anyone. No, I can't see too many studies that says that is, going to be beneficial.
Yeah.
So, you know, not all calories are the same, and that's something about the calories in, calories out. I'll give a idea, and this is, you know, right at the end of the spectrum, so it's not completely, you know, practical, but it gets you thinking about, you know, if someone was to say, as an adult male, I want to consume 1,800 calories a day, you know, a Big Mac meal with a large Coke, a Mars bar, and 4 Krispy Kreme donuts, that's 1,800 calories.
And that's one meal.
That's one meal, yeah. So it goes, it should go without saying that, you know, I'm on a diet and I'm counting my calories and I'm allowed to have 1,800. If you had a Big Mac meal with a large Coke, a Mars bar, and 4 Krispy Kreme donuts each day for a period of time, you are going to be very unwell, and you're not going to lose weight. You're going to feel very ordinary, whereas that 1,800 calories in lean meats or vegetables or getting your vitamins, your minerals, your nutrients, your fiber, a wide range of things, you know, some times science says, oh, it's just calories in, calories out. Well, it's not the case. So it's the type of foods. They react very, very differently.
Yeah. So with intermittent fasting, are you suggesting counting calories or are you just talking about it in relation to good food choices?
Yeah, good food choices. Yeah. So no, I don't count calories or look into the calories. I say if you're eating good food, you're eating good food over a period of time. 80% of the food that you eat, you know, because we're social creatures as well. We enjoy our food. We enjoy catching up. And the very first point that I made is a diet that is good is a diet you stick to. If you're constantly counting what you're having, you're not allowing yourself anything in the social setting, catching up with friends, with family, then that's not sustainable. Yeah. So by all means, still enjoy your food and the type, but overall, if 80% of what you have is really good, then you're gonna be get some good results.
Yeah. So what about intermittent fasting for women and men? Is it different?
It is different, yes. So
please don't tell me it's harder for women.
Unfortunately, yes, it is. It is more difficult for women. So really interesting when I was looking back through the studies and the meta-analysis stuff, is that most studies don't include females at all, and that's human studies as well as rat studies. So 58 of 71 studies were only male, so only 13 included females in any way, shape or form. So that can miss some of the important differences.
Do we know why?
I haven't done enough research methodology stuff as to why that was the case, whether they're easier rats to come by or it's just an easier study to do, or it's a lot of the studies are based off male rats. So
female hormones might play a part.
Yeah, they do play a hormone. Well done.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So, yeah, look, it's a basic biological difference. So the female body needs to be ready for childbirth and lactation, and starvation responses will differ because of this. So where you can get some positive effects in the male body saying that, okay, there's no food, so I'm going to conserve energy and I'm going to eliminate anything that doesn't need to be around. The female body says, oh dear, this is stopping the potential continuation of our race, and therefore it's putting out some different warning signals.
I'm taking that as women are smarter.
I know that to be true. And females will get a much larger hunger response if the body feels it doesn't have enough food to keep it ticking over. Other symptoms that are more highlighted in women than in men, reduced energy, lethargy, poor sleep, anxiety and adrenal insufficiency. So none of those really seem to be positive things.
It doesn't sound very exciting.
I'm going to say, yeah. So if you go too hard, too fast, the pun's somewhat intended there. But it still can be really good though. So
slow and steady.
Slow and steady, yeah. So I've got some practical tips there for some females as well. So you wouldn't do consecutive days of fasting, so fast on non-consecutive days. So if you were going for a 16-8, so 16 hours of fasting with 8 hours of eating, you wouldn't do that 2 days in a row. So you'd go back to a normal eating pattern every other day. Your body tells you when there's enough food, and don't overstress the body on fasting days. You know, so if you exercise on the days that you have more energy, so you wouldn't do one of your fasting days as one of your gym classes or a run or anything like that. So that's some of the points to go for. You would not fast if you were pregnant or planning on becoming pregnant or breastfeeding, have fertility problems, are underweight or malnourished. Also, you have to have a positive relationship with food to undergo fasting, because otherwise you'll be thinking about it the whole time. Mm. And I'm looking further into gut disturbances. So I would say, if you're listening to this and you're thinking about doing it, but you've got an unstable gut and disturbed gut, then maybe not start on that. However, I think there is some stuff to show that over a period of time that this can be beneficial for that.
Okay. And so you mentioned exercise. How does that fit in?
Yeah, so exercise, so this can be done in conjunction with your exercise plans. One of the sort of the commonly known exercise guidelines is 150 to 180 minutes of exercise. What's sort of not so well reported there is that's to reduce your risk of chronic disease. If you are looking at weight loss, you need to increase that up to around 300 minutes a week, but do this safely so you don't have any overloaded related complications. The variety of exercise is really good. So it can be exercise on the way to work and be exercise during work hours. And it's almost as important to reduce your sedentary time as it is to increase your overall load. Again, I'll make mention to different studies and different things. One of the social studies was, you know, three people, one CEO who did an hour boot camp every day, but then was basically behind his office nonstop after that, but worked really hard for 5 1-hour workouts. There was a girl who worked at a cafe waiting tables.
On her feet the whole time.
Yeah, I think we know that she did no structured, no formal exercise, but her energy expenditure over the course of a week was miles higher than the person who had planned exercise in his lycra, pumping iron, doing all the high intensity stuff. Yeah, but if the other 23 hours are spent not doing anything, it's as much as reducing your sedentary as it is to get out there and move. walking programs through history, they seem to be really, really good, really, really simple. They don't take much toll on the body, and can be really, really beneficial because they become part of that lifestyle that we talk about with the diet as well. There are some hacks that you can use with high intensity interval training to get extra bang if you are doing some things and you feel like, how can I do a little bit more? So short bursts of higher intensity, obviously that your body can handle, but yeah, doing something good for your body every day, I feel, is a good way to look at it. Because you know, talk about 80-20 for your food, if on most days of the week you're doing something good for your body, you're going for a walk, you're going to the gym, even eating well, if you give that a great, I had a really good eating day today, give that a tick. And if more days you give yourself a green tick than not, then you're going to be in a pretty good place.
Physical and mental health and fresh air and, you know, get out in nature. It's all the...
Definitely, yeah, getting out there. We know how vitally important that is, because it's all encompassing, you know, how you move, how you eat and how you feel.
So what take-home messages have you got for us?
So I think I've got to jot down the take-home messages would be, you know, as we talk about dietary manipulation, it's really simplified into you can reduce your intake totals, you can change your macronutrient composition, and you can alter the times of meals. Now, exercise can be used in combination with those factors. The one diet that you can stick to is the one that will bring you the most success long-term. Intermittent fasting can assist in covering multiple avenues for these increased successes. Every person is different, so use the guidelines to find what works for you. And we will go back and touch on a little bit more of the science, because I spoke about it, we were going to talk about it, and then all of a sudden we were past it. So if you are listening and thought, hang on, you were going to say all this stuff and then it hasn't got there, but I will touch on a little bit of that. Yeah, use the guidelines to find out what works best for you, whether it be a 12 or 14 or 16, one meal a day fast, whether it be 2, 3, 4, or 5 times a week. Variety is fine. Don't beat yourself up if you're not on 100% of the time. You can't be perfect the whole time. And if you fall off, if you fall off the wagon, get back on the wagon.
Get back on the horse.
something like that. I think people know what I say when I mean that. I may get the terminology wrong though. Combine intermittent fasting with other healthy eating plans and exercise for better results. So real food, you know, just eat food. The less stuff you pull out of packets, the better off with walking programs and resistance training. And it is different for women. So you can get the same health benefits. However, proceed with caution initially due to the biological differences between men and women. What does the science say about effectiveness? So alternate day fasting in animals was an effective, a simple caloric restriction in reducing obesity, body weight, and fasting insulin and glucose. So that's all good. It also reduced total plasma cholesterol and triglycerides. Also good. Good for the liver and inflammatory gene expression. And had beneficial effects on cancer risk factors. So that's all very positive.
So that was for alternate day fasting.
That was alternate day fasting. Now, however, this is a bit of the kicker here. So that was the rat studies and then
the human rat studies.
I probably actually could have skipped over that, couldn't I? This is the background and the science being positive. Humans, there's sparse data on alternate day fasting because probably trying to find people who don't want to eat every second day. There was modest weight loss and led to improvements in some metabolic parameters. However, reports on extreme hunger while fasting indicate that this may not be feasible for a public health intervention. So a lot of really good stuff, but it was just too hard.
Well, it's like what you said, putting it into your life and maintaining it.
I couldn't think of not eating every single day. I like food too much. So modified fastings, this is the 5-2 diet. More human studies in this. So 7 of 9 studies, that's nearly 80%, reported statistically significant weight loss. That's really good. It's unanimous reports that given the current state of evidence, metabolic benefits, fasting regimens are not superior to those of continuous energy restriction. So it said that, yes, there was weight loss, but there wasn't greater than just the studies that did it without those times.
So this is lower calories on 2 days.
This is lower calories on 2 days, correct. Yep. There was a mixed bag on mood and behavioural markers. So some of them said that mood and behaviour went down, with others showed an increase. And that's what you get when you look at meta-analysis. Sometimes are different. So less than 15% of participants reported negative side effects. So mostly that was positives. because there were mean improvements in mood, including reductions in tension, anger, and fatigue. Also increases in self-confidence and mood. So, again, this a slightly conflicting, and that they always say that more science needs to be done on that, but that looked quite positive. And then the one that sort of tickled my fancy the most, which is why I'm talking about intermittent fasting, because time-restricted feeding, which is goes into the intermittent fasting, there was really good results in rodent populations. This is the one that was done nearly on all males. So this was associated with reductions in body weight, cholesterol, triglycerides, glucose, insulin, improvements in insulin sensitivity, and there were even positive health outcomes without weight loss. So on the rats that didn't lose weight, they still had the positive health outcomes, which is quite evident in a lot of exercise studies. You know, when you increase your exercise, sometimes it's not associated with weight loss that people are after, but the health outcomes improve. The interesting thing is the role of circadian rhythm. So that is something that I really want to look into more. So one of the studies had rats eating high-fat diets, eating whenever they wanted to. So whatever they wanted, whenever they wanted. And they, of course, had pretty bad results. So the control, that was the control group. So the rats in the study were given that exact same amount of intake. So measured the same amount of intake. They ate that over 8 hours and then fasted for 16 hours. So the rats with the same intake over a different time had far different outcomes. So that the rats who ate whatever they want became obese and metabolically dysfunctional. Type 2 diabetes was prevalent. The equivalent 8-time daytime feeding were protected from obesity, hyperinsulinemia, hepatic steatosis, and inflammation. So same intake, different times of the day, intermittent fasting, basically one group of rats overweight, diabetes, the other group of rats didn't put on any weight and were protected from all of those
and so that was the 16 hours where the body's actually got time to process the food and
and then spend that extra time to create pathways to remove waste and things like that. So now there are human studies as well. So this is the last one that I'll go into. So over human studies, there was 4.1% more weight loss with so no calorie restriction, just eat with the over 8 hours and fast for 16. So they lost 4% more weight. Those studies on one meal a day, so this was slightly more than a 16-hour fast, reductions in fasting glucose and improvements in your LDL and HDL cholesterol. And there was self-reported higher hunger in the morning for those people only eating one meal a day, but it was considered acceptable because there were no changes in measurements of tension, depression, anger, vigor, fatigue, or confusion. So they were able to just, yes, they were hungry, but none of the other ones, were able to function. So if I look at that from the way we first started speaking about it, I wouldn't think one meal a day, if you were, if you felt hungry the whole time, I don't think it's sustainable.
No.
Whereas for 16 hours, when you're sleeping for hopefully 8 of those, that's certainly something that's able to be slipped into the lifestyle a little easier.
Yeah, and you talked earlier about some different times, 18-6 and 12-4. No, not 12-4. That doesn't
matter.
12-12. Is 8 of eating and 16 of fasting your preferred one?
I think that's probably the one. Yeah, a lot of the studies say that's a good starting point. Practically, that's skipping breakfast.
Yeah.
So when you think about if you have your evening meal, you don't eat again after that, and then you don't eat until midday. So 8 p.m. till midday is typically something, and it's quite achievable. You have the other benefits of if you like snacking, you're having supper or having those things that generally aren't as good to eat after 8 o'clock. If you just know you're not having those, it reduces those as well. And after sleeping, you can get have more mental clarity and feel quite good leading up until lunchtime. So if there was to be a 20-second consult and they're looking at intermittent fasting, I'd say give that a go.
Yeah.
If it's really hard, it's not for you. It should not be really hard. You can just go change away the food that you eat. I prefer a lower carbohydrate, high protein, high fat diet because that helps with your satiety and helps regulate your blood sugars and reduces those cravings. I know I've implemented this with quite a few people, and generally speaking, it's very successful. It's then whether you can work that into a sustainable lifestyle.
Yeah, fantastic. And change takes time. You know, people have to be committed to it, don't they? And even with the exercise and but
When it comes to healthy eating, very few people go and do it the first time and say, right, I'm going to make a change, and that change then, you know, stays. A lot of the exercise and nutrition things, I think back to some of the smoking campaigns, and it's not the first time you try and quit that you do. It's not the second time. So I think they say it's that the seventh time that you attempt something. So as long as you're continuing to try and do something good for your body and eat the right things, then over time you'll get better at it.
Yeah.
And better at it.
And don't beat yourself up.
Don't beat yourself up. No.
Baby steps.
Yeah. For sure.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for sharing that knowledge today. I think it's really important. And as you said, it's not just about weight loss or weight gain when you're, you know, looking at what you're eating, but it is about what else is going on in the inside and the organs and the things that are going to keep us here.
Being good to yourself, being good to your body, and that's how much you move, the type of food that you eat, and if you you go down this path, the times that you eat it.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Pete.
If you have a topic you would like covered, get in touch via our socials. The contact details can be found in the episode notes. If you have loved listening today and are looking forward to future episodes, please subscribe, rate our show, share our podcast with your friends, work colleagues, and families. So for now, goodbye. Thank you for tuning in today, and see you next week.